All right, so spiritual family, welcome back to the podcast. So this is a video version of the podcast. I usually just do anchor versions. Now I'm adding this whole new dimension for my Patreon supporters. You will get the first display or exhibition of this video. And to everybody else, this will be available on Anchor or Spotify. So today, we've got none other than Shade once again joining us. And I think today we're going to tackle new issues and new problems and basically navigate our ways to new paths in reality. And I am so excited because every time I have this brother join, we always dive deep and we always grab a hold of gems, you know, that, you know, are secluded or hidden from the uninitiated eye, you know. But upon us having these discussions and conversations, we realize just how many of us are out there. You know, we all love seeking knowledge. We all love learning and expanding our mind and consciousness, which is what we're going to do today. All right, so I just want to open up with the moral dilemma that I want to pose to you, and you give your best response to how you would deal with the situation, right? So there was a whole category of moral dilemmas that were present on this particular website. It's called icebreakerideas.com. Okay, so there were top 28 moral dilemma questions, and I chose the lifeboat. This is what it's called. So you are on a cruise and the ship encounters an unexpected storm, right? So the storm continues to rage, and eventually you and the other passengers are told you must head to the lifeboats and abandon the ship. So ship is all bad now. So as people begin to line up, you realize some lines have fewer people. Some have families, and some seem to have younger and single people. You know you are strong and capable, right? So do you choose to help a group composed of three families with a few young children, a group of seniors who obviously could use your help, or go with the young, strong people with whom you might have a better chance of survival? So we must consider the fact that this is life or death. I mean, storm is going to ravish the ship or this boat. And the chances of you surviving obviously dramatically decrease when you choose to help the seniors. I mean, let's pretend you are immortal. You're not Superman or anything. No superpowers. You are a human being with all your faults and everything. What do you do in this situation?
That's a very good one, because it's like each group represents an aspect of for example, the elderly, you know, represent the past. The strong people represent the present, and the families with the young kids almost represent the future. Right. So that's just like one of the, my mind just like puts in categories like that. So it's, yeah, it's very, very interesting one. So the three aspects of me, I mean, it's not really practical, but the three aspects of me, the present, the one that wants to survive, right, would obviously choose, you know, the fellow young people, right? And then there's that aspect of, you know, when they say when an elder dies, a library burns with them. So that's the part that would go with the elderly, right? And then the family, you know, is your sense of community, your sense of contributing to, you know, to posterity. And that's the aspect that would want to go with, you know, the families, right? So, so to me, it's hard for me to actually answer that question. Because it's going to be like, it's different aspects of myself splitting into three and then saying, okay, you know, it depends on which audience I'd be appealing to. That's like kind of like where my mind is going. It's like, yeah, for like your more Nietzschean, you know, type, yeah, let's go with the young people because
you have to decide.
You're not,
Like, you have to.
Yeah.
This is like, life or death. Given or death, that scenario, what do you do?
So I choose the families, man, to be there. Yeah, I choose the families.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So the reason why you chose the family was the aspect of yourself that you explained.
For the kids, man. You know, so that
society.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, right? I mean, if you look at it from the complete holistic point of view, right? In terms of us being spirit and being infinite, right? We came here and we incarnated here, you know, to test, to experience new avenues. Although we are every possibility, right? We came here and we incarnated here to experience limitation. We were discussing it the other day, right? And so the value of families, right? That's like one of the most challenging aspects that we have to deal with, you know? Families working together, but yet your most influential people of society, right? Whether you talk about the Rothschilds or whether you talk about the Rockefellers, or even if you talk about the Black nobility of Rome, which I've been delving deep into, I see some African ties in there. Why is it called Black nobility, right? But that's another topic for another time. Possibly intermarried into, you know, the European bloodlines over time. But anyway, the point of what I'm saying is that you notice the families, right, are always the most powerful, influential people that can actually get their ish together, you know, hey, granddad, or hey, you know, get over yourself. Let's make it work for the family. And, you know, and they actually end up becoming successful. That's actually what the empires or, you know, are actually about. So us being a supreme being, you know, without a personality or impersonal, right? We incarnate as these different facets, different aspects, right? Because you could argue that actually humanity is actually of one family tree. We could talk about our DNA being spliced over time or whatever, but you can still trace a common lineage. Even if it's not on this planet, there's still a common lineage that we all come from, although we look different or whatever, you know, so we are like a family tree, right? So that's like the most interesting thing. Like, how do we actually make our families work, you know, and how can we actually, and then it comes back to the African concept of the Trinity, the true Trinity, right, is actually God the Mother, God the Father, God the Child. And it was removed to say, oh, Holy Spirit, right? But actually, in a more practical sense, right, the most powerful foundation is that pyramid. So every time you see the pyramid and you're like, oh, Illuminati, actually, no, it's referring to the unification of Father, which is thought, right? Mother, which is feeling, right? And Child, which is manifestation. So when you harmonize thought and feeling, you have manifestation. So like, that's why I chose, you know, family. But by coincidence, there were three possibilities, right? The elderly, the present, well, the young people, and then the family. So
yeah, I love that, man. Response. I would expect that from you. Quite multi.
Yeah.
And quite symbolic. And one cannot dispute with that response at all. I think you mentioned very valuable points. Family is probably the strongest unit, the strongest force that can come out from the human experience, because it's inclined towards what evolution has produced. We are social creatures. So having a family, having a support system, obviously gives rise to that which is natural within us. Now, what if I told you that all possibilities, right? What if I told you right now that all possibilities, you saving the family, you saving the young children, helping the young children so that you survive, or helping the seniors, all of those events of you doing that all actually happened. So here's what we're diving into today, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. We're diving into the quantum model of reality. You see, this is a concept that basically arises from Joe Dispenza, right? And let's dive deeper into what quantum physics actually discovered and why it is the most revolutionary form of science that has been discovered on planet Earth and how it's going to facilitate so many new possibilities. I think my screen is kind of freezing. All right, I'm back. Okay, great. Oh, yeah. Okay, so quantum physics basically is the realm of uncertainty. I mean, one can bring forth an immense amount of fear when you just mention the words, the observer effect or the measurement problem. And this is the whole essence behind quantum physics, right? And quantum mechanics is that subatomic particles, those very tiny pieces of matter that cannot be perceived through the naked eye, right? We need those powerful microscopic technologies, right? In order to achieve that. But basically what every single physical thing is made of, these subatomic particles, every single thing, including your body, including the place that you're living in right now, the microphone, the laptop, the sky, wind, everything is comprised of that.
Yeah.
Now, this subatomic particle behaves quite weirdly. And it's akin to the measurement problem, which states that upon you observing the subatomic particle, it behaves like a particle. But when you're not observing it, it behaves like a wave. So this wave is potential. It's possibility.
Yeah,
there's even a thought experiment of a cat in a box, right?
Schrodinger.
Thank you very much. The thought experiment where the cat, there's a poison that's placed in one section of the box. And in quantum physics, it's known that the cat was both poisoned and killed and also still alive
and well
simultaneously, until you open
the observer
to make an observation to see what's going on. So essentially, what we're realizing is that the mind and physical matter have a close relationship. There is a connection that mind has on matter. I would like for you to expound on that idea just a little bit, as to what you discovered in quantum physics and what influence it will play in our near future.
Okay, well, that's amazing, man. When you spoke about the observer's effect, right? So when you observe something, you're measuring it, right? Anything you look at, you're measuring it by the distance that it is from you, isn't it? Right. So an object that you observing, see the word ob and object, observe, right? Objective. as for you to grab that object, right? The measurement is even your hand, depending on how far it is from you, isn't it? Right. So that has to make it solid so that the frequency of your hand and the object become one so that you can then manipulate it. The word manipulation comes from manus, which means hand in Greek, right? So that being said, when you're interacting with that object, right, you're using matter on matter. I think Joe Dispenza talks about that, right? Matter on matter. So your hand is touching that object, right? And if your perception is not too good, you'd miss the object, isn't it? So the better your perception of that object is, the better chances you are of grabbing it and being able to manipulate it or move it around, right? So that's, I'm keeping it, so that's in the more practical sense. But now, in the dream world, right? The dream world is actually, when you spoke about the observer's effect, I immediately thought of the dream world. Now, in the dream world, you can do that depending on the quality of your concentration within the dream, right? So your concentration is basically allowing that experience within the dream of being able to touch an object and feel it, right, in the dream. But now, as soon as you leave that object and you look away, right, look away, then there's the wave, right? The wave aspect comes in. And haven't you ever noticed that in a dream, you look in one direction, look in another, look back in that direction, you know that that same scenery is no longer there anymore, right? You've noticed that.
Yeah.
That is quantum physics happening there in your own dreamscape, in your own dream world, right? And if you study, say, the Emerald Tablets, right, the Book of Thoth and whatever, they talk about a realm called Amenti, right? Amenti. And Amenti sounds a lot like the quantum realm, right? The quantum realm being that realm of infinite possibility, right? And they've been exploring it even in your Marvel films now, right? Ant-Man and the Wasp, right? Where they go into these timeless realms, right? That go deep, right? Where time and space are not the same anymore, right? The laws are actually like almost inverted if they even exist at all. And so I think that's where we are approaching an awakening, right? Our pop culture now is even starting to slowly grasp these concepts that ancient wisdom, ancient knowledge, right? Has been delving with. Has been exploring since, you know, time immemorial, right? These eternal principles that have always existed. And each culture that questions reality enough, you know, have put this, coded it into metaphors and symbolism and so on and so forth. And so the thing about Schrödinger's cat as well, right? The cat being both alive and death, I think they call that quantum juxtaposition. Right, where they can superimpose possibilities upon each other existing simultaneously, right?
Yeah,
well, there's even the you could even connect it
superpositions as well, so yeah,
yes, right, and also there's the other thing, even in the Osiris myth, right, where Osiris dies and is resurrected again, right, but then also becomes the king of the underworld. Well, what is the underworld, right? So you have the positive interpretation of the underworld, and you have the negative interpretation of the underworld. So our positive interpretation of the underworld could be the quantum realm. And then the negative interpretation could be, you know, hell or Hades, whatever, you know, whatever fundamentalist understanding. By fundamentalist, I mean a literalist, depending on what religious background comes from. You know, they try and scare you into thinking a certain way because fear is a very useful tool in terms of, you know, getting people to think in a particular method that you'd want them to think. If you can convince them that that's the way, using fear, that's it. But now if you can transcend that, you know, you have your quantum realm, you know, you called it the realm of uncertainties because all possibilities happen there. And it's about us, the death aspect of Schrödinger's cat being alive and dead. You'll notice also, like I said, Osiris, who died and then is resurrected and then became known as Orion in Greek mythology, Osiris and Orion, which connects to the stars. And they say as above, which is the infinite expanse of heaven, and so below, the infinite expanse of the quantum realm. You know, so it's all these interactions of these different forces. And then again, dare I say, the story of Jesus, right? What Yeshua ben Joseph, particularly Yeshua ben Hur, was another reference to it possibly, but Yeshua ben Joseph, the son of Joseph, right? Joseph was also Joseph was his father, but was also a reference to the Joseph that came to Egypt, that ruled in Egypt. So it always shows us, it points us back to the ancient wisdoms, right? And the ancient mysteries, and then therefore the Schrödinger's cat being alive and dead, right, is also the story of Christ. He was dead, but now he's alive. And then in the book of Revelations, he says, I have the keys to Hades and death, right? I was dead, but now I'm alive. And I have the keys to, I have the keys to death and Hades. So the keys represent control, like you say, the master key, right? The master key is the key that can open every door in the house. So when he says, I have the keys, it represents, you know, I have mastery over these concepts, right? And because you'll notice that Revelation was written in Greek, what was the symbol for the underworld in Greece? It was Hades. So that's why in that particular time, it's Hades, right? But now another interesting thing is that you have Pluto, right? Pluto is known as the god of the underworld, right? But also a plutocracy means a ruling system where the most wealthy are the ones that are ruling. Pluto was also known as the god of wealth, right? So that being said, the amount of wealth, the amount of abundance hidden within the quantum realm. And other movies that are exploring the quantum realm also is your Cloverfield, right? You had your first Cloverfield film.
Yeah, there's Cloverfield, there's Avengers as well.
Right, Avengers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but now Cloverfield particularly, right? I mean, you have your four-leaf clover, which is a reference to the cross, which is a reference to the Ankh as well, right? The Ankh being a reference to the womb, right? Which is an infinite possibility of manifestation, right? Which is suspected that even connects to E equals MC square, right? That being said, the Cloverfield, it's first a creature that comes from the abyss. So that symbolizes our fear of the quantum realm, our fear of uncertainty, right? Until you familiarize yourself.
Get into right now, exactly. So yes. you actually mentioned something with regards to quantum physics in terms of how it behaves in the dream realm. So we see more evidence of it, more clear, definite evidence of it in the dream realm. But, Joe Dispenza had countless discussions with quantum physicists about this whole idea, sipping on martinis. That's what he said. And they basically, came to the conclusion. One of the scientists he was discussing is like, look, quantum physics is very good at describing how tiny particles of matter behave, but it doesn't have the same application to larger objects, to things in the classical world, you know? And Joe Dispenza said something quite interesting and quite intriguing. He was like, perhaps we're poor observers. Perhaps there is an effect, but we're actually poor observers. We're not looking correctly. And it got me to the point, right, where I realized that every single one of us, it's not even an egoic realization. This is a realization that's been realized for millennia, like ancient tribes and traditions and religions all mention this whole truth in their own particular way. But for sure, the best rendition, the best explanation for me, or the best description of reality is almost like a simulation, you know, like even the movie The Matrix has a similar explanation for what this world actually is, if we're looking at it in terms of mathematical codes and patterns, and also how they discovered that when you look at the formulas that govern the subatomic world, these formulas are almost identical to the codes that operate browsers that we use for the internet. That's mind-boggling. That shows you that there's a quality within reality that best describes it as a simulation. If we even look at Michael Talbot, he explained, he had the book out called The Holographic Universe.
Holographic Universe.
And and basically he stated that if you look at a hologram, it's got a very interesting and peculiar properties, because if you take a tiny piece of a hologram of, let's just say there's a huge hologram, and you just take a tiny piece of that hologram, you can find information about that whole hologram within that tiny piece. And basically describes the universe as well. You can find a universe basically in a grain of sand. So elaborating from that whole idea is that we are a program, every single one of us. We are, in order for us to jack into this simulation, this reality, we have to operate through a program. And this program is-
We call it routine.
Patterns.
Right?
It's patterns. I mean-
There's different terms for it, right?
But and the scientists have discovered that we have over 70,000 thoughts a day. Right?
Yeah.
70,000 thoughts a day. And check this out. 90% of those 70,000 thoughts are the same thoughts that we thought yesterday and the previous day. So that shows proof that we're living in a pattern. We're living in some kind of program. You know, the mind has two layers, right? It's got a conscious and the subconscious. So the subconscious deals with the things that you don't need to pay much attention to, so that your conscious attention can deal with the things in your immediate environment, right? Because the brain is not designed to make you happy. The brain is not designed to make you experience love. The brain is designed to help you survive. And how it helps you survive is that it stores information as to how you've been doing certain things, certain
patterns in the past.
You've been going to work, you know, how you've been relating with other people, and not only you, but how you observed your parents deal with those exact similar situations, how your father and mother related to each other, how they dealt with their finances, how they viewed themselves and their esteem. You know, you are absorbing that like a sponge. I feel like when we're adolescents, we're so impressionable, right? The mind is so impressionable. It will take all that information in. And later on, we discover that we've got belief systems that we're not too certain as to how we picked up on them. But a lot of them, you just absorbed as you were a child, right? So we developed this program. And now this program, Joe Dispenza describes it as living in the Newtonian model of reality. And in this Newtonian model of reality, we are victims of cause and effect. You know, like that whole saying, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
That's a reference to Newton as well, because of apple fell in his head.
Exactly. You know, so it's like, we are nothing but the result of the past, you know, and we are caught in this infinite loop, in this infinite cycle. The ancients would call it karma, right? But, you know, now in this new model of looking at reality from the quantum model, right? We're no longer living through being a victim of the past. We're no longer being caused by stimuli to have a certain effect. You know, we're no longer reliant on the external to produce a cause. You know, most people want to make a change, right? Or they want, let's just say, abundance. They want a new job, though they want a new relationship. And they're waiting for something external to happen. That's the old Newtonian model of reality, of waiting on something to create an effect. But now in this new model, now we cause the effect in the here and now. So we're no longer relying on something external. Now we're causing that effect. And now Joe Dispenza put it so poetically when he was like, you are now no longer being a record of the past, but now your brain is a map. It's a vision to the future. So the brain is either being propelled to the future or it's being pulled back by the past. So in being propelled to the future, the brain has an image of what reality it desires.
Could be. The possibility.
The possibility.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And then the past is how it happened. So most people are looking to the future, you know, anticipating the future, based on
still running on the previous
model. You know, the linear predictable way. But now we're stepping into the realm of uncertainty. We're stepping into the realm of uncertainty.
Uncertainty.
Where all things are possible. But the program, I even akin to how the Matrix described this whole scenario, that when you operate with the program, the simulation reflects a life that is in resonance with that program, right? It's even found in the reticular activating system within the brain.
Yeah.
That your brain will literally filter out information in the external world that is in accordance to your value system. Anything
that's it, yeah.
That is outside of those value systems, the logos, it deletes, it discards. It's basically
yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
So it's just crazy how now the simulation is in resonance with your program. So now when you try and make an adjustment to that program, when you try and adopt a new program, what does a simulation do? There's one thing that the simulation does, and it's very well described in the Matrix movie, is that it will hijack the closest person within your environment, whether it be your mother, whether it be your father, whether it be your husband, your wife, your friend, your business colleague, it matters not. They will try and configure you back into that same program. So tell me, what is your experience of that phenomenon of having a program? I mean, having belief systems, I mean, being a part of the spiritual community, we all know very well what belief systems are and how they've hindered us in terms of expressing our fullest potential. Now, tell me what you've discovered on that road with regards to programs and how reality responds to a program, and how, additionally, you can end it off with this part, how we can change the program. I think I'll add on that right after you.
Okay. Yeah, man, that was a very, very amazing, comparison, using the Matrix as an allegory for how reality unfolds itself in particular patterns, and we call them programs, right? And the thing is, it was also interesting, like how you brought in the agent, right? How the agent will hijack the nearest, the nearest person in your proximity to, to force you to assimilate back into, the past or whatever, right? But also at the same time, once you've really let go of your previous identity, right, and really tapped into that source of infinite potential that you truly are, the universe hijacks also the nearest.
That was the other part that I was going to mention.
Right?
Precisely.
Oh, okay.
The simulation.
Oh, so then I won't go too much deep into that.
But
it's like, and you'll notice it's never too far, right? The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. It's never too far. It's right under your nose, right? The universe will always use the most efficient and even, for lack of a better word that comes to my head right now, the most convenient method of manifesting that state of being that you'd like to be in. And each manifestation, like you said, right, you're basically talking about second causes, right? So there's no such a thing as a second cause, right? There's only the effects of the first cause. Now, when you go into the subatomic realm or the quantum realm operates mostly in waves, right? But manifests itself through particles once they've solidified, okay? Solidified on account of certain conditions being met. Okay.
One condition being an observer.
One condition, an observer, right? Yeah. And then it's called the standing wave, right? Which is paradoxical because to stand means to be stationary, and a wave is something in motion.
Motion.
So right. So the standing wave is a bit of a paradoxical yet it's a reconciling aspect. So Dr. Joe Dispenza mentions, if you desire to connect to that aspect of yourself, right, in the morning when you wake up, just say, hey, show me something new today, show me that next level, that next aspect. So I tried it. And then
you tried this.
Boom,
okay. Yeah.
I tried it, right? And that same day, I went to the gym, and then my coach was like, hey, man, my son's coming in from Germany, right? I need you to fill in for me on these days, this, that. And look, I'll pay you extra. I'll pay you this amount for that and that and that. All right. And then after that, he speaks to someone else about something else, and that person couldn't make it. So he comes back to me. He's like, listen, we already arranged the schedule, right? But I also need you on these days, da, 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 and I'll pay you also for this and that. And that.
On the and same day. Boom, all in the same day.
Yeah. All in the same day. And I just put the source within me. You could call
that
it.
Is, you could that call is it, living you know, Christ, in the quantum realm.
You could call
realm.
It Allah. You could call it. It's in you. Right.
That is and living Dr. in the Jonas quantum Spencer possibility. Said,
you understand? And all it is asking for something new from within you. That's all it is. It's that simple. Right. And something new is uncertainty converted into your favor.
Hmm.
Right. Something
Alan
novel.
Watts said something right? similar to that. Yeah.
You're right. So that exactly is it, right? And another interesting about simulation, right? Simulation also means connects to the word simultaneous, right? So to happen together, right? Mm-hmm. So this reality being a simulation, it means that there are certain programs that are working together.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Sunrise, sunset. Right, you have the moon, right? It's full and then it wanes, and then it has certain impact over the world around us, right? You'll notice that in gardening, right? The best time to pluck the roots out, to transplant a plant, depending on what plant it is, there's always an exception, is at the full moon, right? And there's certain time depending on the moon to put your seeds in, right? And there's a certain time with the moon, and you'll notice ancient cultures, right? They had lunar calendars, right? Even in Islam, Ramadan corresponds with the moon, right? That's why in Islam, you'll notice it's the moon symbol with the star. You'll notice a lot of the religions, they have celestial bodies as their symbols, right? Because they notice that certain key events, Can you hear me? Testing, 1, 2, 3. Testing, 1, 2, 3.
That'll do. Yeah, you can continue.
Okay. All right. Initially, what I was saying in a nutshell is how a lot of the spiritual traditions, particularly religions, you'll notice that there's a reference to celestial bodies, right? The objects, the heavenly objects, okay? And that certain holy days, right, or holidays coincide with certain seasons. And these seasons are basically a reflection of the simulation. The simulation being a connection of different forces interacting and giving certain manifestations at different times. So we call them the laws of nature. And the laws of nature is essentially what scientists study. But a lot of scientists do not study it as one interconnected field. You know, they try and dissect it, then they try and cut it up and try and see, okay, what is this? And then they sever it from the rest of it. And then you can see it even in our pharmaceuticals where they just isolate one active ingredient and then, you know, they give it to us. And then, you know, I don't know if it's placebo or what, we end up getting quote unquote healed by that particular thing. But actually, when you eat the natural aspect of it, the source where it initially comes from, it could be a carrot or it could be, you know, an apple or it could be, you know, depending on how organic it is, right? Then you'll notice that there's more of a holistic healing that takes place. And that being said, it's because of that particular fruit being a microcosm of a bigger system, right? And when you consume that particular plant or fruit or, you know, you then create that ecosystem within yourself, and whatever malady you happen to have is healed by restabilizing, creating an equilibrium within, because an illness is basically an excess of something or deficiency of something. But once you can consume a holistic a meal, a hearty meal, right? Hearty, healthy, whole, right? Then, you know, you're creating that simulation within yourself, right? That process. And that is how healing takes place. So what I'm saying is basically we have that idea of a simulation of an artificial reality or whatever, but then there's also a simulation from the perspective of a sense of divine or a sense of unified expression, you know, of possibility being expressed. So all those things of understanding the simulation are true, but then there's also that other aspect of it that we also need to look at, you know, that there's actually, you know, there's also a beautiful aspect to it than just this, cyberpunk dystopian matrix perspective, although the matrix has a lot of very rich gems in it. Yeah, that's basically
what I wanted to say about that. I just want to quote two people. I'll start off with Alan Watts. I was listening to an audio of his, one of his lectures, and he was saying that reality is gorgeous. It is the plenum, the fullness of total joy. It's like when you look up at the stars, you realize that it's like a firework display, which is a great occasion, a celebration. Wow. The universe is a celebration. Yeah. It is a firework show to celebrate that existence is, you know. But nonetheless, the universe itself, the universe that we perceive, is an illusion. You know, Albert Einstein even stated, reality is an illusion, albeit a persistent one. But in order for us to manipulate and interact with this illusion, the simulation, in a way that's favorable, is one key component. And I want to quote Albert Einstein again, when he said, and this is going to prelude to this new conversation that we're about to have, when he said, imagination is everything. It is the prelude. It is a preview to life's coming attractions. Now, that's something I'd like to jump into right now, because imagination is something, it's a lost art. You know, it's a lost skill. I believe our ancestors were able to dabble in their imagination in somewhat of a spiritual way. I feel when we dabble into our imagination as the normal average individual on this planet, living in this specific timeline right now, usually dabbles into imagination idly to just entertain themselves or to escape their reality. But our ancestors used imagination to modulate the physical world. That is a power that is inherent within imagination. But we're taught, you know, stop imagining when we're children, right? When we're staring into the abyss and we can see that our eyes have stared on to other possibilities all the time.
The other planets, they say,
snap us back. Yeah, get back to Earth, snap us back, you know, sit straight.
I mean, there's value in both. Up,
you know, like, as if
there's value in both, but
you know,
there's value in both, right? But we have to, like you said, you have to cultivate the best of both aspects and marry the two, right? Because now they're calling us back to Earth, and then we're losing our connection with imagination
to the heavens, it's just strange, how when they assert that we pay attention, we place sternness and rigidness and contraction towards the body, as if attention requires some form of contraction. But that's not the case. But anyway, let us not digress. I just want to get back to the point of imagination as to how the ancients used to use it to modulate reality. And imagination is the key component in interacting with the field, the quantum field, the zero point field. You know, it's known in neuroscience, right? It's called, this phenomenon is called neuroplasticity. So neuroplasticity is basically the idea behind how your neurological pathways, you've got like millions of neurological pathways, each firing different kinds of neurons at billions of bits of seconds. Like the brain is known as the most complex organism in our known universe. there's just so much complex tasks that is performed by the brain. But one of them is being the neurological pathways, and each pathway represents a belief, an idea, a certain habit, a thought pattern. Yeah, a thought pattern.
Yeah.
That. And the beautiful thing about the brain, the beautiful thing about the brain is that those pathways are plastic. They're malleable. And when you are in a state of imagining something new, let's say you're imagining a new job, you're imagining abundance, financial abundance, you're imagining a new relationship, you're imagining traveling the world. When you are doing that, you are rewiring. You are literally rewiring your pathways to be in resonance with that reality. You are training your body. Your brain is releasing chemicals to train your body to prepare emotionally for that reality. So that is the tool of imagination. But as I was saying, most people tend to use imagination to their own detriment. I mean, how many times has this happened? I mean, this happens to all of us, but it's just how many times are you aware of it? How many times do you just walk on about in the street? You're taking a walk in the park or the street or wherever the case may be, where you might be at, and you just start imagining the worst case scenario. Or you're driving your car and you just imagine yourself just swerving to the left and then bumping somebody else. Or you imagine yourself going to work or going to whatever place of activity in which you're contributing to society, and you imagine a negative thing happen before you get there.
Yeah, it's like a waste of
the most powerful, precious commodity.
Actually,
it's the most like any technology that AI may create in the next 100,000, 10,000 years will never compare to the human imagination. Because
you
where
are the technology.
We are the exactly. So. For me, it's a lost art. It's a lost skill.
It's waking up, man. It's waking up. It's waking up, right?
So
it's waking up. Like you and I and our communities are evidence of
this whole concept of imagination with regards to you and your own particular life and how you dive in. Because I just want to reiterate that point that when you are in an imaginative state, even a meditative state, you are literally making your pathways more plastic. And when your pathways are aligned in that way, reality behaves differently. You know, it's known that thoughts are the electrical charges and feelings are the magnetic charges.
Magnetic.
And then when they together, they create the electromagnetic charge
electromagnetic.
That has an influence, a direct influence. Over reality. On how the quantum sea of possibility collapses.
Abilities so, unfold.
So basically, this stuff is not just reserved for the dream realm. This is not just reserved for the dream space.
It's happening here now.
Quantum physics actually happens right here, right now.
That's it.
We are unfolding.
That's it. Max Planck talks about that too, right?
Please, he says that everything, expand on reality. Max Planck and expand
It's just one quote, right, that comes to mind.
Okay, yeah, just expand your understanding of imagination.
So Max Planck, he's known as also one of the fathers of modern quantum physics, right? Yeah. Max Planck, and he says that actually, I'm going to paraphrase, right?
Okay.
He says that all things exist by virtue of a certain force, right?
I know that.
And this force is known as consciousness. Well, he says it's mind. Interpretations of it, because he spoke in German, I think. I think he's German or Swiss.
Yeah.
So I think they translated what he was saying as well. But anyway,
yeah, but
this force is known as mind, right? And some interpretations say consciousness, right? Some interpretations say consciousness, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they can be interchangeable sometimes, I guess. Because consciousness manifests in different layers and different like forms, right?
Exactly.
Yet we can agree that consciousness is the all-pervading force, right? That we talk about, you know, we call it Yod Heh Vav Heh in the Hebrew tradition. You know, you call it Brahma in the Hindu and Vedic traditions, you know. So there's different names for this force, right? But I love how you said that thoughts are electrical and feelings are magnetic. And when they join together, it's electromagnetism. Well, guess what? The earth is surrounded by electromagnetic fields, right? Your aura, right, is an electromagnetic field. And your aura is basically that resonance, right? That aspect of spirit that we say your spirit actually isn't within you. You are actually inside of your spirit, right? So your spirit is that electromagnetic field, right? That electromagnetic field is the unification of masculine, which is electro, and feminine, which is magnetic, right? Because under most circumstances, you know, the women attract the man, right? I know right now gender roles are being switched up. Okay, we know, we understand that, right? That's part of whatever process there is. But come, let's keep it simple, right? And in its simplicity, under normal circumstances, the woman attracts the man. Because if the woman pursues the man, I think Alan Watts talks about it, right? The woman pursues the man, right? And the man's like, hey, whoa, wait, what's going on?
Something's going on.
Right? It's like if an animal comes, if the prey comes to the predator, then the predator's like, hey, whoa, wait, what creature is this? You know, because when the creature runs, like when you're even the dog, right? When you run past the dog's like, yay, what's going on? And comes right after you, right? But then if you go towards the dog and you're like, you know, domineering and whatever, the dog's like, hey. But anyway, the point of what I'm saying is that's a crude metaphor. But remember, within women, there are masculine traits, and within men, there are feminine traits, right? So, you know, go figure, right? But initially, and then the electro, we call it yang, right? Because it's friction, right? Because even water, right? You have solid objects, when they rub together, that creates friction, right? But now that's solid, but now liquid, water, when you create friction with water, it creates electricity, right? And then you have the magnetic forces, right? You know, gravity is a form of it. We still try and understand what gravity is, but what we do know that gravity does have magnetic traits to it. Or magnetism might be a trait of gravity. We're still trying to understand that. But now that's the yin, right? That's the yin aspect, okay? And you'll notice the moon is like yin and the sun is like yang, right? But the sun has its own gravitational fields. So that's why you have yin within yang and yang within yin. But ultimately, they'd always use the solar and the lunar symbol to represent the electromagnetic aspect, right? And your brain as well is believed also to the one side consists of a very logical, very linear aspect, like, for example, electricity. And the other side is very emotional, very emotive, right? The right brain. Which could be equated to, you know, the more magnetic aspect, like how art, right, creativity, you know, attracts us, right? Like when you see an art that captivates you, right, when you're at the gallery and you see this beautiful haunting painting, right, you just stop and it just lures you in, right? So that is an aspect of, now that's just the electromagnetic field, and the electromagnetic field creates a torus sort of pattern, right? A torus, and that's why you could say why the holy books of the Hebrews is known as the Torah, right? It's an interesting coincidence, right? And then the age of Taurus, right? The bull, right? And the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet is a bull. And also, even in African cultures, bulls were a form of currency, right? Bulls were a form of like we say, what? Nakensa Nkomu, right? Now, if you break down Nkomu, it's cow. So even in saying thank you, you have the value of the cow inside that, right? And that's where the word, ooh, holy cow comes from, right? Even in the Viking traditions, right? It's believed that Odin and his brothers were freed from the frozen ice by a cow, you know? So the cows, and there's another, I won't go too deep into it. I'm not sure about how your audience is about psychedelics, but the cows' patties used to have a lot of DMT, and that DMT would manifest as mushrooms.
You speak about that most definitely. Many people are intrigued about psychedelics, but so how would you relate all that into like imagination? So
imagination, cool.
Okay.
So now imagination is where you enter the toric field within yourself. And then what happens is that you have certain thoughts, right? They pop up. And then the thoughts that you choose to entertain will have a corresponding emotion with it. And once that thought and that emotion are in interaction, you create like a loop, right? And then that loop can be sustained or broken according to your will and how far you've developed your will. So when we start imagining things that we don't want, right, that means that our will, or will is also like concentration. That's the value. Remember when they call you back to earth, it's basically concentration or to constrict, right? But there's use in that. Remember in scriptures, it says faith the size of a mustard seed and you can move mountains, right? So it's again that juxtaposition of the small and the big, right? The few and the many, right? Or the monopoly, right? Mono meaning one and poly meaning many. So Neville Goddard expands a lot on it. So he's definitely a guy that our audiences should check out if they haven't already. I trust they have, but you know, he talks about the awakened imagination, and that was the 1920s, right? And he's in the
1940s. Yes, yeah.
Please excuse that. Yeah, 1940s. And so he talks about the awakened imagination, and he talks about how every holy book, the central character of that is basically an allegory for the awakened imagination, right? Mm. And when you understand that very well and you read the Holy Scriptures will actually make a lot of sense. If you can look past the moral aspects, because the moral aspects are just asking you to do good with your imagination, right? Visualize mm-hmm. good things with your imagination, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Love your neighbor as yourself. We call it the golden rule, right? So whenever you visualize a positive outcome for your fellow human being, make sure that it is something that you'd like for yourself, because at the end of the day, we are all one. So yes, and it will materialize. And so because we're all one, we call it karma, whatever, it will come back to you. So whatever, if it's good, if it's a good imaginative process, it will come back to you, right? And it will even, just as a seed, one seed will give birth to many, 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 many fruits, right? Depending on the conditions, right? So too will your manifestation create a chain reaction.
I just want to have one quote there from Andrew Carnegie, and you can continue on. He was like, any idea that is held in the mind, that is emphasized, that is either feared or revered, will begin at once to clothe itself in the most convenient and appropriate form available. I just want to put that out there. I was like, whoa.
That's okay. Fire, man.
That's fire, bro. That speaks a well of wisdom with regards to imagination and its power. And it's quite intriguing. I would like you to elaborate more on that, because I do recall us conversing about this whole subject with regards to Neville Goddard and his profound effect that he's had on you. But I would just like to expound on that a bit more, and then let you take the lead after that with regards to him. So it connects very well with a book that I've also read by Maxwell Maltz that's called Psycho-Cybernetics, right?
Oh, so yeah, okay, yeah.
You've heard of the book before, right?
I've heard of the book, yeah.
As anybody Psycho-Cybernetics, to read that book, please. It will give you a whole new myself too. Concept and view on self-image. So self-image, how we imagine the self, because our self-image is the thought we have of self, you know, the how we imagine self to be. You get me? So in developing a self-image, that self-image then attracts, right, things of that nature, things that are vibrationally aligned with that self-image.
That's it.
Right.
Yes.
So
yes.
If we hold a new image of self, not only does self change in the world, but even on a physical level. You know, Joe Dispenza actually did an experiment where they tested how people, how their bodies were behaving with regards to different kinds of emotional states. So a person under stress, anxiety, worry became more matter. They became more
physical. Yeah, dense. They became more dense. Yeah,
and then
when
they adopted love, compassion, happiness, joy, ecstasy, they became more energy than matter. Think about that. So now, when you are in that higher vibration, that higher frequency, when you've adopted mental images, when you're entertaining imagination in a positive way, when you're seeing yourself in a delightful experience, you are at that moment more energy than matter.
Than matter.
Yeah. And in that moment, you are more energy, which means you can influence the quantum field.
Wow.
And the quantum field exists within all of us. You know, I said this once, and I said this once to one person and they denied it. But when I explained it more, I think it made a bit more sense. I was like, the Akashic records are not stored in some great distance in the boundless universe that we have to travel one day and attain that information. No. Your body houses the Akashic records. Do you know?
Man.
Your body is made of ancient material. Ancient material that predates things existing right now. Billions, trillions of years ago. Your body is comprised of that material.
Yeah.
So you house, you have the Akashic records already within you. And the Akashic records, along with the quantum field of possibility, exists in your imagination. Your imagination is the tuning dial. It's how you tune in to the quantum field of possibility, where every single thing is happening simultaneously. Shade, would you believe me if I told you right now that there's a reality where you've got 10 million bucks in your account right now as we speak, 2:35 p.m. 2022, 10th of March? There's a reality out there where you have 10 million bucks in your account. Would you believe me if I told you that?
Yeah, the thing is, like, I
and
do
feel
that.
That please I'm identify so... how that feels. Please,
man,
identify how that
like...
feels. How
it's
does that
like
feel?
The particles, in me just start like buzzing.
that is your body indicating to you that that already exists. The body knows no time. The body knows
that's true.
No time. It's that's only the
true.
Mind that brings time. The body is always in the
psychological,
prison.
Yeah.
Exactly. When you imagine something, your body thinks it's already happening now. That's why
that's
you
true.
Get
even when you watch a movie. Yeah, when you watch a movie, right? And it's a scary movie, and then the there's a jump scare. You know it's a movie, man.
You know
but
it's a movie.
There's that slight twitch. There's that slight twitch in reaction to, you know, what's taking
You're
place
scared.
In the movie.
You're scared.
And your heart rate is accelerating and decelerating according to the pitch and the pace of that particular movie. Although you know for sure it's just acting. Right. And why don't we use that? You know, why don't we use that phenomenon to our advantage, right? To the betterment and growth of our lives and the people around us, right?
there was this experiment that just amplifies the power of imagination even more, where they took athletes, right? And they attached biofeedback systems to their brains to ascertain what's going on, right? So they had them run laps, and then shoot some hoops, right? And then they studied the biofeedback system to see what was going on within their body and what was going on within the brain. And then the next step, this is what they told them to do. Now, we don't require you to do that all physically. Now, we want you guys to sit down and imagine as if you're running up and down the court and shooting the hoops. guess what they found? Yeah. Guess what the conclusion of this experiment was? That the body, the brain, did not know the difference between an imagined experience and when they were actually physically running and doing those physical activities. That is, knowing that information should revolutionize your whole experience about life. Yeah. Because now you're entering a whole new space where you see yourself not just existing in this narrow down physical body, living in this specific timeline within space and time. Okay. All right. You are literally in a sea of possibility. And whichever possibility you want to experience, envision it in your mind, envision it in your imagination, and your body will not know the difference. Is there any time or any occasion where you've applied this principle and you've seen a direct result of how your body felt or something materializing in your physical experience?
Yeah, so my dream was youth development, right? So I worked in a retail job, Vodacom, and what I do is I'd visualize, you know, myself doing youth development, and unfortunately, it wasn't, that environment wasn't the best at that time for that particular desire. So the universe, you know, took me to a different place. And I had a dream where I was driving somewhere, and then I popped up, and then I was in a hot air balloon floating, and then I landed somewhere, and then there was a jungle gym, and then there were kids. And then I was showing this kid how to climb on the jungle gym, because there was like a rope, right? You know, those things where it's that wooden flat surface, and then you climb up on the rope type of thing.
Okay.
And then the kid in that dream later on, I ended up, he's one of my students. So this was before I returned and started teaching. I had that dream. And then later on, because I did imprint it on my subconscious mind that youth development is actually, you know, what I aim for, right? And then later on, so I did have a dream. So the dream confirmed that my subconscious has taken that particular desire and is looking at, you know, manifesting it. So in those different aspects I found myself in the car, and then in the hot air balloon, and then that is basically just symbolic vehicles, right? But essentially, then that same kid, he's bigger now. Like his voice is broken now, and he's even like taller now, right? And by coincidence, he's also into stock market. He actually understands stock market and stuff, right? That the same kid that I saw in the dream. There were other kids there as well, but and I've been, you know, training him. And then that aspect of entraining the imagination, and then it will manifest in the nearest forms, right? In the ways that, you know, is the most expedient, right? And that's actually how the universe works, right? Sometimes the only delay of manifestation that we have, right, is demanding that the universe manifests in a specific way. Mm-hmm. The best thing that we do is imagine the outcome, right? Don't worry about the how, right? Don't worry about the how, right? The more you worry about the how, the more you're worrying, right? Mm-hmm. And then the more you worry, right, the more delay you are adding onto that how. So the how is also quality, right? That quality of worry is being, you know, contaminated within that. But through forgiveness, you know, you have to forgive yourself, right? You have to have the sense of compassion for yourself, right? And for all the times that you've imagined in a way that hasn't served you. And another practice that I do that helps me, and every time I get back into that, then things start to flow for me, right? Is that whenever I reimagine, it's called reimagine. Whenever I reimagine a past event that didn't happen according to the way I wanted it to, right? What I do is I train myself to reimagine it in a more positive sort of way.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And
So you're redefining the past. You're basically redefining
exactly. Yeah, in the words of George Orwell, they say he who controls the past controls the future. Right. So in the George Orwellian thing, they go and then they edit history, they edit the newspapers, and then they send it back so that whoever accesses those archives, they'll only see what was written. You see. But now, in a positive sense, remember, we are alchemists, right? We have the ability to look at these things and the negative of the world and say, actually, what universal law is being corrupted here? And how can we heal this law and use it for our benefit and the benefit of those around us? That's alchemy. So alchemy, in a sense, connecting it, the imagination, the three magi, right? The imagination, the unification of the conscious, subconscious, and superconscious, right? The three magi, frankincense, myrrh, and gold.
Please,
right?
Please, you see can how you it's all allegories expand on the to... superconscious part? I don't think
for maybe... sure. So many people. So the superconscious is basically the electromagnetic field in its awesome glory. Right? It's the electromagnetic field that you find around the planet, you find around Earth, right? You find in the solar system, you find in the galaxy, and it always manifests as a spiral, right? A spiral. That's why spiral spirit, right? Even the Spartans are named after the spiral, you know? Google the etymology of Spartans, you'll see they're named after the spiral. It's a particular weapon they wove, the way they wove their weapons into that handle, right? Spiral, right? You look at the crown, right? So corona actually means crown. So when you alchemize this concept of corona, it actually means crown, right? Which is the highest part of the tree of life as well. Keter, it sounds like also ether, right? That's the super conscious. That's the Akashic, right? So the super conscious mind is accessed when the conscious and the subconscious mind are in harmony. Right, so the superconscious mind is that which connects you to all things. It's what Dr. Joe Dispenza talks about when you become no one, no thing, nowhere. Right, you know, those are the three magi, right? Identity, right? Place and time, right? And once you transcend that, you have access to all possibilities.
You can only attain that in deep meditation, though, to be no one, right? Nowhere, no thing.
Right. But now deep meditation is basically returning to the womb, right? Remember when you're a baby, right? That's the part where your spirit manifested into the physical realm, right? So basically deep meditation in theory is returning to that essence where there's that perfect stillness, right? It's kind of like when you meditate and then you enter that warm, that deep warm feeling, you see? And once you return to there, infinite possibilities await you. And from there, you can gradually then bring in the desire that you want. You see? So if you're on a state of where you don't want to be, all you have to do is return to the womb, right? And then from the womb, right, you can then create the desired outcome, right? Womb, a tomb, right? A tomb, atom, right? So when you break it up, a tomb, it can be negative, right? But it also means a tomb, meaning dying to your previous self and being reborn into the womb, that deep meditative state that you were when your body attracted the soul into this existence, right? There's a term that they call it. It's not coming to me right now. But now you can understand why in the Christian spiritual tradition, they talk, no, you must be reborn again, right? And why Christ was in the tomb. And then in 3 days, remember, when he was born, it was the three magi. And then when he died, it was 3 days, right? And then you have Jonah, right, who was in the fish for 3 days as well, right? What does the fish represent? Well, fish is rich in omega, right? What is omega? Omega helps neuroplasticity in your brain, right? So can you see how all these traditions are interlinking to quantum physics and how your imagination influences your world from the quantum physical standpoint. So once you've returned to the womb, like you said, deep meditation, it's like that deep, nice, warm feeling. Then from there, you know, you feel warm and fuzzy, then you can even create, you can start to gradually create your desired outcome. Just the end result, just the end result. That's why I am the alpha and the omega, right? I am the beginning and the end. All you have to do is return to the beginning and then envision the desired end. Don't worry about the how.
Mm-hmm.
Right? How now, brown cow? Right? Then again, the cow.
See,
we go like
because
all the time.
Most people are still conditioned to view their life from the senses, from the physical senses. Most people enchanted with how things appear physically.
Appear.
You lost your job. Appear. That's a physical thing. That's like, that happened now. That's like, I need to deal with that now. So it brings about that anxiety and they lose sight of this truth. So what would you recommend when an individual is on a downward spiral within the physical plane? Mm. And we all know how that feels, where everything that can go wrong just goes wrong. And you just in that plane of existence where negativity just seems to be pressuring you down to a constricted purview of reality and possibility. You just don't see as much possibility because of the circumstance or the event. How would you advise somebody to use their imagination in that space?
Well, even like yesterday, for example, I was also in a bit of a state myself, and all I did is I just made sure that whatever I had control over, okay, I went and, you know, I didn't even eat. I let, you know, my stomach just, you know, reset itself, fast a little bit, and I went to sleep. And when I went to sleep, I just did my best to console myself, okay? And console myself and also forgive myself, right? Just say, you know what? It's okay. You know, whatever you're going through is part of your process, right? And somehow, some way, pardon me, you are getting better from this process, okay? And initially, all I did was, I didn't particularly use my imagination, but actually, yes, how you would use your imagination would be to just return to the womb, right? Just to clear that. I think that's actually what I was doing. And I just went to go and sleep. And I made sure that as I was falling asleep, right, I was just reconciling, right? And consoling myself, reconsoling and reconciling with myself. And there's a verse in the Bible that talks about that. In fact, Neville Goddard actually mentions it. He says, when you go to bed, right? He's quoting scripture and he's given an interpretation of it. He says, do not let the sun go down on your anger, right? Blow your top, but don't go to sleep angry, okay? And within that, okay, allow yourself to feel the way you feel, all right? But with knowing better and allowing that expression, right, to exist within its own dimension, but allowing for the grander dimension to also come through and heal that process. It's like a doctor. A doctor has to be objective. Do you understand? A doctor cannot be partial. He has to remain impartial in order to heal the victim or to heal the person, the patient, right? So in other words, in order to heal the patient within you, you have to be patient with yourself, right?
Nice play.
You have to be patient with yourself, right?
Yeah.
Because in the beginning was the word, right? And so that's what I did, right? I allowed myself to feel how I needed to feel. I blew my top, but before I slept, right? I allowed myself as well through that process, right? To heal, to understand that it's a process of healing. It's a process of becoming whole. For me to value my wholeness, sometimes I have to go through not being whole in order to value being whole. And that's also why, possibly why we are here. When we know that our true spiritual essence is formless and therefore is all infinite possibilities, we had to come into form in order to appreciate and value formlessness, right? Because remember, spiral connects to spiritual. What is spirit? Spirit is that animating aspect that lives in all things. So it's kind of like a process of allowing yourself to die, right? When I was laying down, I was allowing myself to die, right? Metaphorically, right? I was allowing those events to whatever shaped how I felt about it to take place within me, right? And while I allowed it to take place, I got out of the way, right? And what happened is that it could no longer feed on me anymore because I'm allowing you, okay, you want to exist? Okay, exist, but I'm not going to feed you. You can exist, but I'm not going to feed you. And then its true essence that is at the core of it, whatever is good that has just been corrupted, is then extracted from it. So if you had a terrible day, basically what I'm saying is if you had a terrible day, just make sure that whatever you can within your power is resolved and then go to bed and then lay in your bed, right? And however you're feeling, allow yourself to feel that way without taking it personally. You understand what I'm saying? And when you do not take it personally, you're no longer empowering that negative thought form. You're freeing yourself from that thought form. And whatever that thought form, whatever essence of that thought form is truth, will remain with you. And then from that truth, you can then plant a new seed. And that new seed, that's why when I woke up, I felt refreshed and I felt, you know, ready for today, whatever, you know, awaited me. And it was like I died and was born again. You get what I'm saying? So that's just an example. If you're going through that downward spiral, go take a nap, right? Go take a nap. And all, especially, like I said, resolve whatever affairs so that, you know, you taking a nap is not you escaping. Do what you can with what you can, right? So that when you wake up, it's less of something bad waiting for you than when you left it. But in console, in your heart, right? Become your own midwife, right? Become your own therapist, right? Become your own, you know, that aspect of yourself that can console you and be like, you know, I understand what you're going through, and that's okay. You know, somehow, some way, you know, you're expanding from this, right? You're becoming stronger from this, right? And allow, and then once that incessant, you know, thing that keeps replaying, you kind of have to allow it. You have to, it forms a cycle. So basically you're just giving it a bubble, right? You're creating a bubble for it and you're becoming objective from that bubble and you're just watching it, right? Like a benevolent overseer. You're allowing that bubble to take place, right? And once it has died down, because eventually once you are objective from it, once you kind of zoom out of it, right? And we're having this conversation on Zoom. Once you zoom out of it, right? You're allowing it space to exist within its own confines and there it can wear itself out. And once that dies down, you can then create a new world. It's like the metaphor of the flood, right? God wasn't happy. Even in the book of Genesis, it says, and the imaginations of man was filled with only evil, right? So what did God do? He sent in the flood, right? Because the flood already was how man was ill-treating each other. Men were killing each other. The blood was the flood. So then God took a natural flood, right? And washed it away. And then from there, Noah, right? Noah means comfort. So when you're sitting there, comfort yourself, right? Comfort yourself from the perspective of you being the all, right? That's what Noah means. Noah means comfort. And then there was eight people left behind, right? Well, coincidence, the number eight is shaped like infinity, you see? The number eight is the secret number after seven. Because God created the world in 7 days, right? Cain was marked that if anyone killed him, there'd be sevenfold, right? Jesus performed seven miracles in the New Testament, right? There are seven seals. But the eighth one, right, is the secret number that connects all of that. Because remember, you have eight eight directions, right? You have north, north, west, south, east, and then you have north, west, northeast, right? And you have southwest and southeast. That's eight. And then you have the British flag, which also points to the eight directions, right? So basically, eight represents life and death. You see? Eight represents life and death in most in quite a few cultures. On the eighth day in Hebrew tradition, the child is circumcised, which symbolizes a form also of death because it's a losing of an aspect of yourself. But it's symbolic, right? The emphasis is more on the symbol than the actual process. So what you do is the average human requires 8 hours of sleep. So what I'm saying is when you're going through that downward spiral, right? Resolve whatever affairs you can to the best of your ability and then go and take a nap or go and sleep. And while you're falling asleep, console yourself. Noah means also Noah, know better, know that there is a brighter day, right? Joy will come in the morning, right? Know and comfort yourself, right? Blow your top if you have to, right? But don't let the sun go down on your anger, right? And consort with your heart, console with your heart. And once you feel that the waves, remember Christ says, peace be still, right? Once the waves have settled, right? The emotional resonances of that frequency, once they have settled, start a new frequency, reset and visualize your desired outcome. Even revisualize those events the way you would have wanted them to have gone as well. And joy will come in the morning.
You know, just to add on, that's exactly what I was about to say. Basically, fundamentally, I just want to state that this is Maya. We're living in Maya, and Maya is the illusion. Yes, it's a grand illusion. Yes, it's a serene illusion and divine at its core. But nonetheless, it's an illusion. And we have to play with form. We have to be alchemists. And being an alchemist means playing with circumstances instead of allowing circumstances to play us like puppets. So we play with circumstances. And the way I would approach a bad day like that is I agree with every single thing that you stated. But I think
there's more than one approach.
Yeah, there's more, of course. Yeah. But the new avenue I would take, just to expound on what you said towards the end, is I would reimagine the day that I experienced that went awful or bad. I would reimagine it in a way that I would love that day to have unfolded. Yes, the mind is going to say, no, that didn't really happen. Oh, please. That's just nonsensical. That's not realistic. But I promise you, feeling trumps logic. If you allow yourself to feel as if the day did actually go well, the logical side will begin to wane and you will start to feel as if the day actually did go well. And on a vibrational level, the day did go well, because in the vibrational realm.
Yeah, because of the holistic.
Yeah. Your day went well.
I'm with you. Yeah.
It's only the mind that tells you it didn't go well. That's the mind's narrative. Now, our job as alchemists is to refashion, remodulate, re-engineer, change, modify that narrative in a way that serves us by imagining even the things that happened in the way that was distasteful. We imagine them anew. We bring forth that new energy and that new spirit. So that's a new flavor that I would bring into it with regards to experiencing a bad day or a negative experience. But to sum it up.
I'm totally with you, bro. I'm totally with you.
Yeah. To sum it up
No, I'm with you.
We'll conclude with the tale of imagination and knowing that imagination is our savior. That imagination is the technology.
Did you just say that?
I just say
that. That's it, bro.
Your imagination is your savior. It is the greatest technology that you have in your hands.
In the image of God. Yes.
God right? imagined
right?
you.
Because we were
to
made
be.
In the image of God, right? And you to be, right? And that's actually you imagined yourself to exist before you became you.
Exactly. Exactly.
right?
That's and now you can imagine right? yourself anew.
And then you have the three magi, right? Exactly. And that's now we know why they're called the three magi, right? The three parts of imagination. Exactly. But we'll expound on that in the near future.
In the near future,
man.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, guys.
And to end it off, as what Alan Watts said, you are under no obligation to be who you were 5 minutes ago. So I just want to burn this up and
nice.
End it off with how I always end it off. For those who seek, seek no more. For in the present we find it all. Thank you very much, Shay. See you next time.
Thank you, dear brother, for money. Yeah, blessings to you and all of your loved ones. Yeah.
You too, man. Take you.
Thank you, man. Cheers.